fragility of the international system is clear. UN membership and UN borders recognized by UN no longer prevent powers to take territories, and no, so the system is in place that can prevent this type of development. So what shall we do?
Well, if you like the answers, please send them to the White House, and you tell them that I'm available for weddings and bar mitzvahs and other consulting opportunities. But to be more serious, first of all, the UN has never stopped anybody from doing anything it had to do. Even before I was born, or when I was an infant, North Korea invaded South Korea. I mean, the UN passed a resolution, the U.S. sent troops, but if the U.S. hadn't sent troops, it would just be an empty resolution. We saw in 67 how the UN functioned. We saw in 56 how it functioned. 68, the war in Vietnam, the UN played no role, and so on and so forth. So the UN is what the great powers want to make of it. And since Russia is one of the members of the Security Council, and it does not want the UN to interfere with anything it does, only with anything we do, it bypasses the UN and blocks it, and then, as it turns out, we went to the UN for Iraq, but it turns out we went on the false principles. So the UN is not the issue, but the international structure is falling apart. What needs to be done? To be very blunt, it sounds simple. It's easy to say here, but, putting it into practice is complex. The guiding principle must be that we have to resist aggression. And that's what we're seeing in Ukraine. Andrei Larionov is here, and both he and I have written, and we have plenty of evidence to back this up, that the plans for Ukraine were premeditated and of long standing. We had a meeting in October 2013 in my office with Ukrainian parliamentarians, and I said to them then that if you sign the agreement with the European Union, which was the issue before the Maidan, Putin will invade. And they said, that's our assessment as well, which means that's what he told Yanukovych. Now, it's inconceivable to me that the U.S. government did not think it know about this, but it's clear that the U.S. government had no contingency plan or idea what's happening in Ukraine and didn't react accordingly. And that gets to another point. As Lilia Shevtsova just wrote the other day, we are acting tactically. That might be a charitable statement, because it's not really clear we're doing much of anything. Russia, on the other hand, is acting strategically and purposefully. And despite the vast disparity in power, if one side acts tactically or doesn't act at all and is confused, groping, and indecisive and weak, the actor who has a clear strategic purpose in mind and the will to carry it out will prevail. And we've seen that in history before. So what we need is a strategic perspective and vision that should govern our activities with regard to these areas. Now, that means translating desirable policies, formulating, implementing, and desirable policies, and bringing about a change in situation. Richard talked about the necessity of much deeper engagement with Caucasus and Central Asia. I've written about it, Fred's written about it. There still is no U.S. strategy for the Caucasus or Central Asia, despite all the speeches you heard last few months. Just look at the U.S. budget. If we're going to spend money in Central Asia, that means we're serious. We're not. So people in the State Department can make all the speeches they like, but as the old commercial said, where's the beef? It's not there. There's no presidential interest. There's no interest at the cabinet level. Vice President Biden hasn't been there. Until you are willing to invest real resources on the ground and not just put a Band-Aid over a volcano when it erupts, then you really don't have a strategy. And what's more, what you are signaling to everybody is that you're disengaged emotionally, intellectually, and physically from the area. So, one, there has to be a greater priority to these areas. Now, they're not the main priorities of American foreign policy, but we could stand to raise their importance. Second, with regard to Ukraine, I've been saying this for a long time. What we see in Ukraine, as I said, and others here will agree, is premeditated aggression. In service to a overall policy vision that, as we said, says that Ukraine and other states are not really sovereign states and that their integrity is disposable. And this is what Putin told George Bush in 2008. I told this to a Russian attaché the other night. He was not impressed. but or amused, but it's true. He said Ukraine's not a state, and if you, you know, its territory is a gift from us, and if you try to put it in NATO, we'll dismember it. Here we are. Where I used to work, that's early warning. We didn't get the message. So, one, what do we do now? Obviously, you put more forces into Europe, and you put them in Poland and the Baltic states. You improve NATO's infrastructure. You put the pressure on NATO to follow suit by raising defense spending here and getting those members to contribute more, because there is war in Europe, and as far as the Russians are concerned, those of you who were at Kennan yesterday will remember, the acronym for NATO in Russia is no action, talk only. And unfortunately, that's the case. So action has to be taken. I don't think we have to respond to provocation, but for example, if you have these Russian planes that fly over into our territory, or to allied territory, basically you give them a warning to get out or we'll bring you down. And if they don't listen, we bring them down. And that message will get through to Moscow very, very quickly. So they're not in a position where they can simply afford to lose bombers and fighters like that. Third, vastly upgrade the amount of training and assistance we give Ukraine, including the provision of weapons to defend ourselves. There is heavy fighting right now outside Donetsk as we speak. So Minsk too was a charade, and you know, as James Scher wrote the other day, and you should read it, I mean, if there's a Minsk 3 and a Minsk 4, there'll be bigger charades. The fact of the matter is, until Russia is deterred physically, it will not believe in the principles, values, or will of the United States, and it does not believe in the will of this administration to counter it. To them, they believe they can act with impunity. I'm told that Putin basically told Kerry when they met Sochi, you can take your sanctions, we'll survive. That's not an attitude that indicates a willingness to do business. So those are efforts that need to be undertaken. Fourth, there needs to be a systematic exposure of the entire network of Russian subversives here in Europe, people on the Russian payroll, exposed, just like we did with FIFA, with quite a lot of success. It's not that difficult if you're willing to invest the time and money. You have to, as Václav Havel and Solzhenitsyn would say, expose the lie. Fifth, more and longer sanctions. I would go after energy. I would export energy to Europe. I would change the legislation here that is holding things up. Make the investments. They're long-term investments, to be sure, but it needs to be done. Sixth, I would vastly increase our information capability to transmit our message in the United States, in Europe, and in Russian-speaking areas and throughout the former Soviet Union. If you read the report that came out on for the Board of Broadcasting Governors, BGB, Board of Governors of Broadcasting, it paints a very distressing picture of Radio for Europe and VOA, which are thrashing around without good leadership, sufficient funding, or a strategic direction. The Russians are waging information warfare on a global scale every day as part of the strategy of political warfare here, Latin America, Europe, everywhere else. And we're not. Now, one of the things you have to understand about information warfare is that the center of gravity of this effort, the primary target is, first of all, the Russian audience at home. Because Putin knows full well that his regime is essentially an illegitimate one, and is constantly trying to busy giddy minds with foreign wars in order to distract them from what's happening at home and providing the modern equivalent of bread and circuses to the Russian people. We are doing nothing of the sort. We're you know, basically running around screaming we have to do something, but nothing gets done. I'll give you an example. I got asked by United States Southern Command, responsible for Latin America, come down to Miami and talk to them about Russian information warfare with some other people. And they asked us a question. What can we do about it? By law, the United States military is prohibited from conducting information activities. And I said to them, you know, gentlemen, there's nothing you can do about it. We need the State Department to reopen the United States Information Agency. Some of you may remember that. We need to upgrade RFE and RFERL and Voice of America, and so on. And we need to expose the lie. This administration is not doing any of it. To me, this administration doesn't take Russia seriously. Now, the Russians complain about it, and they're right. But what they want to be taken seriously for, and what I think they ought to be taken seriously for, diverge. But the fact of the matter is, we have no strategy, and I would venture to say, we have a lot of talk, but no action.
Pretty powerful statement, Steve.
But true.
We'll open now, unless, Mark, you have a couple of comments on these issues, and then we'll open maybe the floor for the...
Just one follow-up comment to what Steve said. In terms of NATO action and U.S. military deployments in the Baltics and Poland, it's important to recognize the dissension within NATO on this issue. You will have U.S. officials in town saying that the NATO-Russia Founding Act of 1997, which purports to limit the permanent stationing of troops in new NATO member states, is a dead letter. But then you'll have close allies in town who will publicly say the NATO-Russia Founding Act is still legally binding, which is wrong, that it's still an operative document, which is wrong. So I think the United States also has a lot of work to do within the alliance to act at 28 within the alliance on these issues.
That's the 7th point.